Welcome to the Connected Insurance Podcast, presented by Agency Revolution. Listen to interviews with the most influential people in the insurance industry. Learn the most important strategies, tactics, trends, and challenges facing today's independent insurance agents and brokers. New episodes every Wednesday. Visit agencyrevolution.com and click media to explore the Connected Insurance family of resources for insurance agents and brokers. Subscribe today and get updates delivered right to your inbox. And now, without further delay, the Connected Insurance Podcast.
Hello, everybody. This is Michael Janz, Executive Chair of Agency Revolution, where we automate your systems, engage your customers, and help you grow your agency or brokerage. I want to welcome you to this episode of the Connected Insurance Podcast. I'm especially excited about this conversation because it is with one of the brightest people in our industry, Jay Sarzan. He is a senior analyst with the ITA Group's P&C Insurance Practice. Jay has been quoted in most industry publications like Independent Agent Magazine, The Insurance Journal, Insurance Networking News. He's often brought on stage as a speaker, panelist, or moderator for conferences like the Digital Future of Insurance 2016, Advisen's 2017 Cyber Risk Insurance Conference, and the 2017 Silicon Valley Insurance Accelerator InsurTech Fusion Conference. Jay had, like I said, Jay has his finger on the pulse of this industry as well as anybody I know. He is like so many of our interviewees. He's a tremendous fan and advocate of the broker channel, but he also delivers a wake-up call. So I invite you to pay serious attention to my conversation with Jay Sarzan. Jay Sarzan, welcome, and thank you very much for joining us. How are you?
Good, Michael. Thanks for having me. Appreciate the opportunity.
Well, it's a thrill for me. As I recall, you and I first encountered each other either at or shortly after the NetView conference a year or maybe 2 years ago.
That's right.
Okay. And so I have a little bit of a funny story to share with you. I was having a cup of coffee with Ellen Carney from the Forrester Group in Nashville not that long ago. And I said, you know, she's aware of our podcast series. And I said, what I want to do with the series is I want to talk to the most interesting people in the insurance industry. Who should I talk to? And she started rattling off some names. And then she says, oh, you've got to talk to Jay Sarzan. And she was, you were the only guy that she put in the amazing category. She said, he's amazing. And I said, oh, I said, I know Jay. He said some very nice things. You wrote some nice things about Agency Revolution's technology in a report that you wrote last year. And when I was kind of doing my normal, what's online about this guy? I saw that you had written a report. I think it was about brick and mortar fighting back with technology in the insurance industry. And that's where you cited cited Agency Revolution. And I also observed that we were listed either first or second in the list of technologies, and then I realized it was alphabetical, so I didn't.
Well, look, you know, technically you wouldn't be inaccurate saying you were the first.
Yeah, right.
Out of the,
So, well, thanks for joining us. The first thing that I want to ask you is what you do, what you do, and then, of course, what ITA does as a firm.
Sure.
Because you have a particular perspective. So let's start with that question.
Yeah, well, let's start high level. So ITA Group is a research advisory and consulting firm. We're based in Boston, and we look at several different areas across the spectrum, wealth management, retail banking, payments, and then, of course, there's my practice, the insurance practice, and I'm responsible for the property casualty section of that practice.
And so, you come into this with a real-world career in the industry, yes?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yes.
Prior to ITA Group, I was Director of Strategic Initiatives for the Hartford and its small commercial group.
Right. Okay.
Yes.
So when you say you do research and you publish reports, right, who is your audience?
So I would say that, you know, I mean, without giving an exact number breakdown, our clients include major insurance carriers, major banks, major venture capital firms that may be looking to invest in some of the vendors about, you know, whom I write, as well as other technology vendors that may just be interested from a competitive standpoint to understand what others are doing, or they may have a particular service gap that they may be looking to fill and say, oh, well, this firm might fit our gap might quite nicely, and let's, you know, begin some discussions and see if we can, you know, go with the merger route.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All right.
So they do that, yeah.
So, so my job, as I see it, Jay, is to dive into your brain. And to get you to reveal all your best kept secrets for which you generally charge a ridiculous amount of money to carriers.
Right.
Well, so and typically, obviously, this is what we notice is that the broker channel, the agents, generally don't subscribe to a report from Deloitte or EY or your group or Forrester. So to, you know, to some extent, they look to me for that. So this is one way that I can get that stuff. So,
sure.
Jay, one of the questions that we, you and I bounced back and forth prior to this conversation is, and it does pertain to a report that you released. You know, how does brick and mortar fight back against some of the threatening trends that are facing the broker channel? And I'd like to start by putting that into perspective, okay? I definitely want to drive this down to the practical and to the tactical. But prior to that, let's talk about what's happening in the industry. You've been in this industry for a while, and you've seen a lot of change. And I think a lot of people would say that there's nothing, we've never seen a day quite like these days. So give us your perspective on what those trends are.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to. So, you know, thinking about the insurance industry, I come from a strategy background, so I look at things in terms of the value chain. And when you look across what I call the insurance value chain, there are several components that make up that chain. You know, lead generation / marketing, you've got your underwriting, you've got your distribution, you've got your product development, you've got service, and then you've got your claims. So in all of those chevrons, as it were,
right,
there are some real changes happening. Most of it is being driven by data. So lead generation, obviously, you're seeing the ability to really get at the right prospect through data mining, through an understanding of social media posts and things of that nature. So firms are really able to help carriers or, in the case that you're looking, your audience, agencies, really understand who the best prospects might be. Certainly distribution, we're seeing the incursion of some online insurance distributors, you know, chief among them, you know, CoverHound,
right,
or on Surion, on the commercial side. And then you've got some others that have come up and have gone away. And I'm Google Compare, I'm looking at you, that they may come back one day.
Right.
And they all have varying levels of service with these firms. Some of these online entities offer what I would say would be your full agency service platform, where they can, you know, do some intake on information. They can help you look for the appropriate carrier, and then once the policy is bound, they can act as your service person. They can help facilitate claims, just as you would be able to do through any traditional brick and mortar carrier.
Right. Some of these online platforms are agencies, right?
Yeah. Some of them are agencies, and then some really are what I like to call just really lead generators. You know, they'll have carrier partners that they'll be able to identify which carriers anyone who's entering data into their platform should work with, but they don't, you know, bind the policy. They don't necessarily service the policy on the back end. I mean, it's really as bare bones as it gets.
Right.
And I think in many ways that's why Google Compare fell apart so quickly. People really viewed it as really not much more value added than doing a basic Google search. There was no guidance there.
Well, weren't they also competing with themselves for revenue for that space on the page?
Well, yes. I mean, one of the things when I spoke with the head of Google Compare, a year and a half ago, they weren't getting paid by the click, and that's really Google's thing.
Right. Clicks on insurance are worth a lot of money. So, to Google's credit, they innovate and try things like crazy, even to the point of competing with themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And which is why I expect them to be back in some way, shape, or form. I'm not saying next week or next month, but at somewhere down the line.
While we're on that topic, I'm going to take you just slightly sideways. What about some of the other major data aggregators like Facebook, et cetera?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think that there's always that possibility that, Facebook would somehow be able to enter into a more retail approach than they're currently in. I mean, I think that's the argument for Google, is that you've got so much data at your disposal that they should be able to present you as a lead to any agent or carrier, if that's the case. And I think in many ways, you're going to run into a lot of regulatory issues with some of the data that they have access to. I'm just not so sure. I'm just not sure how workable it really is for Facebook to be able to, develop, a lead persona that they can hand off to carrier partners or agency partners and say, you want to go after these people. I mean, there's just still a lot of open questions about that.
Regarding privacy violations and things like that?
That's right.
Okay.
And I'm not saying that it couldn't happen at some point in the future, but that right now I think it's really kind of a murky swamp for those folks to go down.
So kind of back to the central point, we're seeing a lot of investment activity in the property and casualty insurance space.
Yep.
And so what's your sense? I know predicting the future can be a fool's game and we all look silly doing it, but, that's why you get paid the big bucks. So I'm going to put you on the spot. If you were looking, let's kind of pretend we can see in the crystal ball, look down the road a few years, what do you think might work and what do you think might not work?
Well, I think first you've got to understand that most insurance carriers are facing some real growth constraints. So in the absence of any real growth, they've got to make up for the lack of growth in other areas. And that's really where you're looking at underwriting, you're looking at claims, where if you can automate those processes to the point where you don't have a lot of human interaction, where you don't have the increased cost of underwriting referrals or claims investigations, you can make up some of the lack of growth by easing out some of those costs.
Let me clarify on that. Are you saying that would come through digitizing certain inefficiencies that are in the model right now?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. So we'll start with, looking at underwriting. If, a lot of carriers would just be thrilled to death if you could just, have a pure flow model. You submit, the rules engine makes the decision, no underwriter referrals happen, and out pops a bound policy, and everyone goes away happy. And same thing with claims. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you can somehow, we're seeing the proliferation of a lot of different vendors that are able to rate the, the trustworthiness of the person making the claim. They're able to verify damage much more quickly than they were able to do before. And in some cases, depending on the thresholds of the claim being made, they might just say, look, anything under $4,000, if we feel this person is a creditable, trustworthy person, we'll just take them at face value and cut them a check or send them an electronic transfer or card, however they do it, and go from there.
Can you give an example of a vendor or technology that's doing that, that's facilitating that claims process like that?
Yeah, so I mean there are several.
Okay.
I would say that Solera, which is based in Texas, is one of those vendors that truly has their eye on the customer.
Mm-hmm.
I just released a report several weeks ago, and the main thrust of the report was enhancing the moment of truth. Because as we know, the moment of truth in insurance comes when an insured who's sustained a loss is made whole again.
Right.
So leading up to that point, what can carriers do that will ensure a pleasurable claims experience for that insured, and then what can they do to keep that retention high?
Mm-hmm.
And I identified Solera as really one of the more customer-focused entities out there that would really try to work among the stakeholders, being either, you know, the insured, the carrier, and the repair provider, and in some cases the agent, depending on how it goes. But when you think about the ability to make it so much easier for the claimant, Solera is really doing a nice job. And that's not to say that others aren't doing a good job. There's ACD, there's Mitchell, which is in the process of selling itself. I mean, CCC, you know, and that's sort of kind of what I like to call the omnibus. And then there are others that, you know, may not be as broad in that sense, but certainly, you know, offer, you know, really interesting services. And so, you know, you take a look at firms like, off the top of my head, Intuitive, a Drop-In, Innovation Group, you know, firms like that that can still offer a good claims experience. So all of these firms that have been in existence for some years and some that have not are really enhancing and expediting the claims experience for these people. And then, you know, as I had mentioned, you know, up more on the value chain, you're seeing a lot of providers that are able to feed into carriers' underwriting engines and make near instantaneous decisions that underwriters don't have to, you know, get involved. So when you factor all of that in, what you're seeing is across that insurance value chain an increased digitization that is focused on efficiency, on transparency, and most of all, making sure that the customer, the end user, gets a good experience no matter what. So,
got it. Okay.
Yeah.
And with a lot of focus on the claims experience, right, which is for the carrier, obviously, critical. So, Jay, some of these new technologies and new investments focus on creating efficiencies. And clearly, I suppose there are a couple things we could say about that. One is that the change tends to be incremental, not like radically transformative. And the second is that some of these can be friendly to the broker channel because they're partnering with independent carriers.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now let's kind of look at the other side. There's some investments that and some startups that have no interest in effectuating incremental change. They want to effectuate disruptive or transformative change, right? And there are some that are not friendly to the broker channel. So, sure, if you can, what do you see happening in that part of the world?
Well, certainly there are those that want to disrupt.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question about that. But a lot of those names that I just rattled off a few moments ago, a lot of those vendors are deploying solutions to the agencies themselves, the brokers themselves. You know, in some cases, it's a white label, and they can slap their own name and coloring and branding onto it and pass it off as their own.
Mm-hmm.
So there's definitely a movement to upend traditional brick-and-mortar agents and just make it a completely digital experience, okay?
Yes.
I don't believe that will come to fruition at any point in the next 5 to 10 years, okay?
Right.
I mean, you know, you're saying prediction is a fool's game. Now, I don't think that agencies themselves should ignore the disruptors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they need to embrace the technology that's being made available to them and make them as comparable to these newfangled upstarts as much as possible. And I think they'll be okay. I think the risk that they run is assuming that digital isn't going to impact them, or they run the risk of saying, well, I'm live and my clients value my face-to-face relationship, therefore I don't need to become digital. That's wrong. They do need to become digital.
Right. Okay. So let's move into the practical/tactical phase of this conversation.
Yep.
What do you recommend? What do you suggest to brokers who it presumably acknowledge that the world is changing? In fact, our sense, based on thousands of conversations with brokers throughout the year and surveys that we do, is we're way past, for the most part, we're way past the era where brokers are kind of thinking that they don't need to catch up. There's a very broad sense that they're behind the consumer.
Yep.
So, and I think that causes some anxiety that, you know, when I pull out my portfolio of statistics about how digital today's consumer is, it tends to get people to wake up and pay attention to the rest of my presentation.
Right.
Let's talk to those people. They're awake, maybe a little nervous or anxious, or they want to connect deeply with the marketplace and the consumer. What do you say to them?
So I think they have to recognize that their consumers, you know, this is going to be a broad brush statement, but everyone wants to provide an Amazon.com experience, okay, both in terms of shopping and in terms of purchasing. So there are two different things, okay? You can shop and you can compare, and then once you've made your decision, you just want to move ahead and be done with it. So I think that the traditional brick-and-mortar agencies themselves have a lot of opportunities to provide an Amazon.com experience for their clients. Number one, they can provide a portal into which their clients can interact with them on a basis with which they're comfortable. So, you know, when I talked earlier about, you know, not having to, you know, interact with their local insurance agent from the hours of, you know, 9 to 4, or maybe that was another conversation that I was having. But, you know, when you can interact with your broker on your time as opposed to his or her time, that's going to be a value add. And that can be done pretty easily. I mean, there are plenty of vendors that are out there that can help agencies build up their portals, that they can create an experience that's just like Insurion, I mean, or CoverHound, or any of these online providers. So, so that's the one thing.
Okay. One thing is we can kind of crack the convenience barrier.
Absolutely.
Okay. Because as a general rule of thumb, we of all of the values that compel people to purchase insurance, we generally don't rate great on convenience. Right?
No. I mean, you know, without citing actual numbers, I think that's probably accurate.
Okay. Well, if some guy wakes up at 2 o'clock in the morning on Wednesday and, you know, wants to purchase insurance, he's probably not going to be able to do that with his independent agent or broker. But if he wants to buy a book or anything else, he could do it from Amazon, right?
So exactly. Well, and that's just it. Now, I mean, you know, we always have at 2 a.m. I mean, I don't know how many people are getting up at 2 a.m. to go buy property.
Okay, but Saturday morning at 10 o'clock.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Or after you put the kids to bed at 9:30.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's just any number of times that are not within the confines of an independent agent's typical day.
Right. Things that worked well a generation or two ago are not working so well right now.
That's right. I mean, obviously, we're a much more time-constrained society. Some of it's self-imposed. Some of it has been imposed upon us. But that's just the reality of our lives now.
Okay.
And the agents need to do that. So then on the purchase side, you know, what we're seeing is the increased focus on making what I call the bindability gap disappear. So that's the title of a report that I published last year.
Uh-huh.
I worked with Keith Savino.
Okay, very good. Right.
Yep, Keith was a great resource on this. I met him at NetView, and he and I got to talking, and I said, you know, Keith, there's got to be a way that agencies can make themselves better in the eyes of consumers.
So,
I said, you know, why do you have to wait, you know, an hour and maybe in some cases a day or two to get your final price? So there's technology that's being advanced right now. One provider is a firm called Avist. I think they're based out in Colorado.
Right.
And, you know, those folks out there have really kind of put the agency into a box in the sense that they have collapsed the insurance interview down to a few key questions, and you can drive a much more robust and bindable process than you would have been able to do without this. So it's my recommendation that agencies ought to look into this to be able to go to consumers. Well, hey, look, you know, you want the Amazon experience? Well, we can provide that for you. We can set you up with a way to shop for policies. You can input your data. And, hey, you know, depending on the set of circumstance, if you're just looking for your basic run-of-the-mill coverage for your auto and your home, we can have a policy bound for you at 10:30 at night if you want to, and you're good to go, and you don't need to come in and visit with me.
Right.
That's really where the independent channel, the traditional brick-and-mortar channel, needs to get to at some point in the next 5 to 10 years. They don't need to do it tomorrow, so I don't want to unnerve your audience that this is all imminent, but it's something that they need to start thinking about.
So is your sense that agents and agency leadership needs a little bit of a mindset shift?
Well, I mean, it depends on which agencies we're talking about. I mean, Michael, I mean, I think you probably know that, you know, the average agency principal is getting a little bit long in the tooth.
Right.
You know, succession planning may or may not be in place. So for a lot of these agencies, there may not be a lot of incentive to go out and start thinking about all these. So is it a cultural thing, or is it just an acknowledgement that some of these people are just going to go away and evaporate into the ether? I don't have the answer to that, but for any agent that is looking to maintain its presence in the community for the next, you know, 2 or 3 decades, if they're not culturally attuned to what is going on in the broader industry, they definitely need to.
Okay. Obviously, I agree with you. I'm going to put you on the spot here for a moment.
Yep.
Okay, Jay? So
I thought I'd been on the spot since the get-go, though.
I've been giving you softballs so far. So.
Okay.
So I spend my life listening to and talking to brokers and obviously investing in technologies that I think will facilitate their growth. You, on the other hand, tend to probably spend your time in conversations with carrier executives and in the boardrooms of carriers, or at least, you know, the executive team meetings of carriers, and listening to them and talking to them. Do you think that are the independent carriers, or are some of them thinking that they're generations long reliance on brokers to create that unbreakable bond with the consumer? Do you think they're beginning to perhaps doubt that, or feel that they can't just rely on brokers to make those strong relationships? They're going to invest in those relationships themselves.
So it's a great question, and I will relate to you some of my own personal experience where my previous employer really had to wrestle the idea of expanding beyond their traditional independent agent channel, the traditional brick and mortars. And I would say that most carriers are having the conversation with the understanding and the acknowledgement that customers of today and customers of tomorrow aren't necessarily going to want to purchase the same way that customers of 10, 20, 30 years ago purchased.
Right.
So carriers are going to want to sell their policies, and I don't want to scare off the independent agents, okay? I don't want to put the fear of God into them by saying this, but the truth is that carriers are, for the most part, agnostic. how their products get distributed. It's true. I mean, you know, you're going to get all the C-suites to say, oh, no, believe me. You know, we stand behind our independent agent channel, and we want to sell through them. And that's true.
But they still have to report to their board of directors or their shareholders.
Well, yes, they do. Right. But I guess what I'm saying is that statement's not untrue.
Okay.
So long as the volume of their business submissions are coming in through that channel.
Fair enough.
Okay?
Yes.
I guarantee you that if there was a sea change shift, that somehow one day we all woke up in a world where everyone wanted to buy insurance online or buy it directly from the carrier, carriers would make that happen. They wouldn't stubbornly cling to the romantic notion of
okay.
the local insurance agent. I mean, they just won't. Now, I'll couch that by saying I don't think anyone, any industry observer, myself included, thinks that the independent brick-and-mortar agent channel is going away anytime soon. I cannot stress that enough. They are the dominant channel now,
right. And
they will likely be the dominant channel well into the future. Okay?
Uh-huh.
My argument is that as things are beginning to shift, if agents can produce the same type of experience that a lot of these online producers, these online agencies and aggregators are doing now, I think they will be well positioned to maintain a good chunk of market share going forward. I really do.
Got it. All right. What other trends are today's brick-and-mortar agencies facing?
You know, obviously they're facing the distribution conundrum. I mean,
mm-hmm.
they're facing the advent of some newer trends that might suggest, well, if we're going into a sharing economy, why need insurance?
Ah, so, yes, okay.
You know, that I mean, I'm not saying that it's going to come down and everyone's going to be just ordering up an Uber car and no one's going to have any car ownership one day. But I think that's something that is well out in the future, and they don't really need to be so concerned about it. But I do think they want to keep their finger on the pulse of it. And especially
uh-huh.
younger people come up into the point where they're able to buy insurance for things that they might, you know, need covered, you know, they're questioning the value of paying for something that doesn't get used. So I think that agents and carriers alike are going to have to come up with a different value proposition. And, you know, we're seeing a lot of different things. So you may have an insurance policy that comes with an app that you can load onto your smartphone
right.
that will help you find your lost car, or, you know, if you've
mm-hmm.
forgotten where it is in a parking lot, or, you know, your check engine light is on, you know, what's wrong with it? I mean, you
right.
know, things of that nature. I think that there's going to be a real move to really justifying the value of buying this insurance. You know, what are they getting from it?
Right.
So I think we're going to see that.
Okay. Let me ask you to comment on something. This came from EY, Ernst Young's Global Insurance Report. And I'm pretty sure I have the number accurate, but I'm not more than 1 or 2 points off. I think they said that 84% of insurance consumers perceive that they've had no interaction from their or with their insurance provider in the last 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
Comment on that one.
Well, is that by choice?
Well,
or, you know, I think, you know, to dig into those numbers, I mean, If you don't speak with your insurance carrier, it might be a good thing. Well, you haven't had a claim. You just keep paying your...
Well, I'm getting to sort of to the value part. So let me put this... Let's
yes.
go back to Amazon here for a moment.
Yep.
I at the... shortly, about a month ago, for in preparation for a presentation, a keynote presentation, I added up the number of, or I let Google add up for me, the number of emails that I received from Amazon in the past year. And it was like well over 300.
Yeah.
And I realized that I wasn't a bit offended by that because every single one was intended to speak to me as a person and add value to the relationship and offer things to me that meant something to me. And I thought, wow. If on the other hand, like I purchased insurance and I got nothing from the provider. I mean, first of all, yep. It's an intangible, so people are questioning it to begin with. But then right. really during the course of the year, the broker or the agent or the carrier can't give me safety tips or can't tell me they care about me or something like yeah. that. It seems unconscionable. So yep. That's what I wanted you to comment on. It seems to me that's a fundamental problem.
I mean, so if you're looking at it from that point, okay, if you're a broker or an agent and you're just reaching out to your clients every year to do your quote-unquote policy review.
Because I want your renewal.
Because I want your renewal and I want the potential of maybe upselling you to find out if your maniac kid needs to right. Be insured. I mean, that I think is a little, obsequious is the right uh-huh. word, but it's a little self-serving.
Yeah.
But I do think that there are opportunities for agents to work in conjunction with carriers, or mm-hmm. whether they do it independently, I guess is fine. But to provide those, the heads ups, as I like to call them, carriers are very interested in risk mitigation. So when you underwrite a policy, it's a snapshot in time. Okay.
Right. Uh huh.
So what you believe to be true when you underwrote the policy may not be true a month out. 6 months out, six
right.
years out.
Right.
You don't know. So in what you're trying to do is effectively prevent a claim from ever being filed. So that really entails a lot of risk mitigation.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever risk mitigation tips can be put out to insureds likely would have to be done through the carrier, through the brokers, because the carriers really don't have a big relationship with their
right.
Insureds.
Yeah.
I mean,
right.
they just don't. So it really would be on the shoulders of the agents or brokers. So to the extent that meaning the agents, can work with carriers on those safety tips or, hey, we noticed that you're in a zip code that's about to be murfed by a hurricane or a tornado,
right.
do these things and, hopefully
right.
you'll minimize damage. And then once the danger passes, somehow make some type of outreach. I don't know whether it's through text or an email
sure,
to say,
right.
hey, everything has passed. Is everything okay? Can we help you with things? So it makes it almost as though the agent is there looking over the insured's shoulder and is not just there to upsell them at renewal time.
Got it. Well, obviously, we believe in that.
Of course, nothing wrong with that.
So, to the carrier, clearly risk mitigation and better communications means less claims. To the agent or the broker, the delivery of ongoing value and stronger relationship obviously means, higher retention, more cross sales, and more referrals. So there's a benefit for everybody, including the client. All right, I have one last question for you. I recall once I asked somebody after a really good interview, could you summarize what you said in 25 words or less? And about 10 minutes later, he kind of finished his summary, and I thought, okay, I'm never asking that question again. So
yeah.
So I ask it in a more challenging way, okay?
Yeah.
If you could put a billboard on Insurance Broker Highway and people yeah. were driving along within the speed limit, of course, at 65 miles an hour. So where every word you add potentially diminishes the value because you can only get so much across at 65 miles an hour. If you were going to boil it down to a billboard and you wanted to deliver a message to the leadership of today's broker channel of agencies and brokerages, what would you say?
Technology can be your friend. Embrace it. Don't avoid it. How's that?
Bingo. Okay. Very good. Excellent. Excellent. Very, very good. All right.
Yes.
Jay, next time you fly to San Francisco, remember that that bend is almost on the way.
I feel bad because they kept connecting me through hubs like Chicago or Denver or Washington, D.C.
Right.
The minute that I can get a direct flight from Hartford, Connecticut to Bend, I'll be on the ground.
We'll
have a good time.
I'm sure they're planning it. I'm sure they're planning it right now. All righty.
Yeah.
Jay, if people want to find out more about, what you do or what your firm does or, make contact, how should they do that?
They can go to aitegroup.com.
And let's spell that. Okay.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'll spell it. It's aitegroup.com. We've got our firm's mission laid out there. You've got a full listing of all the research that my colleagues and I do. I feel, write a lot of compelling pieces that touch a lot of different industries.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm a little biased. I think insurance is clearly the best of all the practices. And anyone looking to get a better understanding of some of the trends and innovations that are going on would do well to click on my name or my colleagues' names and peruse the library of our insights.
Very good. All right, yeah. Jay, thank you so much for spending time with us. And I look forward to seeing you at a conference hopefully coming up very soon.
Likewise, Michael. Pleasure.
All right, have a terrific day.
You too. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Connected Insurance Podcast. If you found this episode informative, please share it with your peers and colleagues. Explore the Connected Insurance family of resources for insurance agents and brokers by visiting agencyrevolution.com and clicking Media. Subscribe and get updates delivered right to your inbox. New episodes every Wednesday.